Full Service Radio.
Full Service Radio is proudly supported and hosted by Simplecast, the easiest way for a podcast creator to publish and distribute audio on the internet. For more information, visit simplecast.com.
Should we all pull up your Twitter so we all know what to say about what, Marvin the Martian?
My Twitter?
Yeah, your Twitter.
Mine's the preeminent.
The Oscars?
Ooh. Oh, I thought you meant because I'm a Marvin the Martian fan.
Because of Clueless.
No, I'm combining Clueless and the Oscars.
Well, not my Twitter, BYT's Twitter. That's where.
Official.
Official.
And we're on.
Oh. Hey.
Oh.
I didn't see you there.
Oh. Hey.
Well, welcome to the Sun Cinema Podcast. This is a weekly radio program that's dedicated to the highs and lows of the art
medium.
Of filmmaking.
Oh, come on.
The middling.
The medium. We fucked up your intro.
You just like
that's
jammed
funny,
me
though.
Up. But we are coming to you live from the Lion Hotel, and we are excited to have a guest with us today, BFF of the podcast, comedian Jen Tisdale.
Yay.
My name is
I didn't even know I was going to be there. I didn't even prepare.
She has a
I'd like to thank.
Chat, can you play the music?
I'd like,
play
to
her
music. Off. I'd like to thank God. I'd like
Thanks.
To
thank God. I am your host, Jason Cawley. I'm here with my co-hosts, David Cabrera and Ryan Hunter Mitchell. Gentlemen.
Good morning.
Hey, guys.
Afternoon.
I think you guys should use that Hollywood music all the time.
We do.
We do kind of. It's becoming more and more.
I feel like we've talked about the Oscars like enough times that we kind of have to use this music.
They're happening all year now, it feels like. It's all year round Oscars. Yeah. Every month there's a new Oscars. It's great.
It's either like trip hop or Oscars music.
Go ahead.
But we hope you didn't see the Oscars. Hope no one watched it. Because
it was only 5 hours long, so you could have tuned in at literally any time, and it would have still been on.
You literally can't because it's so hard to stream anywhere.
Oh, sorry,
that's also true.
I have cable.
You could have also gone to an Italian opera, come home, taken a shower, put on your PJs, and still catch the last 3 or 4
hours. Like halfway through live tweeting it for BYT, I was like, I wanted to die so many. It was exhausting.
I feel like they really tried to expedite it, though, you know?
But I think they were well, he played with, like, that was, like, kind of funny. The bits, like, the intros, too. So this was the first year. I don't remember the intros being what they were for the major awards with, like, literally showing clips
every single winner ever.
For the past 90 years.
Yeah.
And that's what, I remember somebody saying, if this is what they're going to do, then this is going to be a long show.
Yeah, but even that they did pretty quick.
I didn't mind that as much as I thought I was going to mind that.
I actually thought it was cool.
It's funny to be
is
like
the one
oh.
that was just like they just showed all the movies and we were like, what is this going to say
but
at the end?
Do you
like,
know what I
movies.
Noticed?
Yeah,
for the
there
women,
was that whole piece.
Every
right?
clip for the women was like, the woman was either angry.
Or Meryl
crying.
Streep. Or Meryl Streep.
Or kissing somebody. And I was like, wow, women have no range. That's why I don't like them. That's why I don't like
did not
happy.
Pass the Bechdel test.
Yeah, that's right. Every clip from a woman, she was talking about one of the winners of the male best support. And I was like, wow, that's cool how they tied that all in.
So overall, I mean, comedian to comedian, how did you think? Jimmy Kimmel did.
I thought he did a really great job, but I think the issue is that, like, you, because of this year, you're wondering.
Former host of The Man Show.
Former trampoline boob bouncing host of the former boyfriend to Sarah Silverman.
Right.
Which is how I refer to him. I think the problem is that I was wondering how he was going to handle all the sexual harassment stuff, but if like
without Adam Carolla,
but if without women bouncing in the background on a trampoline, which is how they should have introduced every woman presenting on the stage just on a trampoline. But like you wouldn't have to do that if like a lady was hosting. That's why I don't understand why everything that's happening
or two ladies,
and we still can't get a woman. Yeah, we have to have two women equals one man. That's how it works for comedy shows. That's how it works for relationships. That's how it works in life in general. Yeah, like if you hire one man. It's going to be cheaper than hiring two women. Oh, wait, that's not true because women don't get paid as much.
I think where's your math? Why are we doing math on
two women equals half a man? So I think he was very funny. People don't like it when they do like when he brought everyone across the street for the movie theater. I thought that was the cutest thing.
I thought it was really funny.
I thought
that was
so adorable.
To go, and I think it maybe went sideways because if you looked at that crowd, They started going completely nuts.
Well, yeah, there was nobody there to like stop everybody from touching Mark Hamill. All those nerds were like, it's Mark Hamill. And they're like, who's...
It was Mark Hamill and Gal Gadot that was like everybody. You could just see like people getting out of their seats and coming down toward Mark Hamill and
really
Gal
quick,
Gadot.
Let's all figure out how to say Gal Gadot. Is it... I heard someone say Gal Gadot.
It's Gal Gadot.
It is Gal Gadot, but yeah. I heard
okay,
someone
they
say
said Gal Gadot.
Someone
like,
said Gal
three
Gadot,
times
and I
thing.
Laughed. I was like, "That's definitely not it. It's
you're
not Gal Gadot
right now."
Yeah, surely it's.
Is it? I heard it's Galay Gadot. Is that not it? How do we say it?
That's actually that was it.
Thank you.
That checks out.
Galay nice. Gadot.
By the way, I watched the intro to the Oscars at Pop's C Bar doing shots and drinking beers with my younger brother.
Oh,
and,
is that what they call the flu nowadays, Jack? Yeah. Wow.
Wow. And everybody was laughing at the closed captions, so I thought Kimmel must have done a good job if it was enough to make Pop's C Bar laugh from
no,
the closed
he
captions.
Had some zingers. I hate the crowd work. Remember when he went out to the crowd and asked like Spielberg if he had any pot, and I was like, although I did like
I
it.
Did,
I did
Spielberg
love Spielberg's
was good in
answer
that.
When he was like, I'm married to Kate Capshaw. And I was like, nailed it, Spielberg. He had a real Me Too. Got a real Me Too zinger in there.
But I did actually wonder like what drugs everyone was on. Like it definitely came up because McConaughey is always, who knows
what level he's
on. He literally
surfed into there from like, he was like, hey, y'all. And I was like,
Rockwell was definitely,
hi.
He was on something nice and cheery. Who won cinematography?
Roger Deakins.
Yeah.
Oh, wait a minute. That guy is so surprisingly fuckable. He got
he's
on
cool.
He got on stage and my body went, whoa, hello,
well,
Rod.
Every piece of him was moving.
Yeah.
While he
I know
was
he
on
kept
stage.
Scratching his face and I was like, uh-oh. But he's a very sexy old man.
Definitely. It's probably the drugs.
I don't know. It's the accent. He's British. He could have been like farting in a box and I would have been like, I'm trying to sleep with you. So that was surprising. My favorite thing is like the poor Dunkirk people who, by the way, I guess it's the best sounding movie ever.
Fuck how much that movie won.
But it only won for like sound. And so I was like, this should have been an old timey radio show. But like those poor guys had to keep like crawling up front from the way back. Cause they like,
can we get some of the sounds from Dunkirk throughout
just
this?
Like some planes. It's just plane noises.
Like this.
Best plane.
That's it.
Wow,
right?
That's topical.
That's pretty much
I can see why I won.
That was a topical joke. That was topical.
Yep.
Wow. So Dunkirk, all the sounds. Sounds great. I didn't see it. Shape of Water. I did not see Shape of Water.
Did anybody
hear? Oh, I saw Shape of Water.
Yeah, you saw it.
Okay, so how does the sex happen with the fish?
Awkwardly.
It's kind of barbed.
But kind
is
of
it, is he anatomically correct?
That gets addressed.
It gets, yeah.
But not really.
Well,
it gets
know,
posed.
Whatever.
The
women don't really need a penis. We all know that. But, like, how does that part work? What's that shape like? The circle? Is there a square peg and a, like, a round hole? What's the deal? What's the deal?
It doesn't quite come off that way, but she seems to enjoy everything. I'll say that.
Okay.
But there are earlier scenes in the film where she's masturbating and she seems to enjoy that equally.
Yeah, I think the fish guy isn't the most important part
that's
of the
really
movie. I think that's like a carrier for the rest.
Oh.
You know? I mean that sincerely. The movie, you could take out the fish part of it and it's more about the peripheral characters kind of like finding out that they're the other. And
but
that
like,
white guy
suck. Isn't she just deaf? Isn't that a weird message to send?
She's
what
just
is she?
Mute.
Oh, she's mute.
Yeah.
So that's all that's like, I'm going to air quote the word wrong here.
She's not injured or anything. She's not like a...
So the lesson you learn here is if you're a mute weirdo, the only person you can fall in love with is a fish man.
No, they definitely don't make it like a weakness over that she's mute. Like
yeah, no,
over and over again, they show that she's one up on everyone because they're limited. Like she kind of has like great standoff with Michael Shannon in it. Where he doesn't know what's going on because he doesn't understand
sign
language.
And he's having a hard time communicating to her.
And she's totally like dominating him. And he makes the misunderstanding of her as being like a weak character as a female. So
it should have won as much as it did.
It was good. Yeah,
Guillermo
it was great. Yeah,
seems to be just a charming little cutie pie. Like, every time he gets up there, he's just so delighted by everything. I don't know if you saw what he did in the movie theater thing. He strolled in with that six-inch
sub.
Just
six
carried,
foot sub.
Oh, sorry, 6 foot. So sorry. I thought we were still talking about the fish.
No.
and I was like, and all I thought was like, baby and Dirty Dancing, I carried a watermelon. So like he's going to wake up the next day and be like, I carried the sub.
And won fucking best director and best picture.
Yeah. So I still think he's going to like harken back to the sub thing and be like, I wish I'd had that hot dog gun. God. Damn it.
So how do we do in our predictions also, from last week?
Jason won, I guess.
Everyone failed but me.
Did you actually win?
Did you pick Dunkirk for best planes?
Great job.
And I need my money. It was a bet.
$3 each.
So wait, so can we talk about the joy that was Jordan Peele winning?
Yeah.
The joy that was all those pictures of Keegan-Michael Key like cheering for his friend in some sad place where he was not invited, I guess. With Colin Hanks, also not invited.
Couldn't get tickets.
Couldn't get that ticket.
So weird.
That was like the best. Do you think that that was, I don't want to say, I think it was well-deserved, but do you think it was also a political move by the Academy? I don't want to think that because I thought it was a great screenplay.
Do they make other moves than political moves?
Well, Lady Bird shut down.
See, that's why I was going to agree with you because it was like the Me Too show and Lady Bird didn't win anything.
But
I think the things that Lady Bird was up against, one of which being up against Jordan Peele.
Right.
So there's one. There was, I think, 4 nominations. So the acting nominations were, they're always tough. And then Greta Gerwig, best director, tough. And then best picture, pretty tough. Like, she's in 4 of the 5 or 6 toughest, hardest categories, you know, that's so... True. If you don't go on a run on those, you're not going to...
Not bad for a first film, obviously.
And that's the thing. I mean, like, you're still... You got nominated for your first feature film, and you're one of the 5 best
directors.
So
that's Jordan Peele and Emily and Kumail and Greta were all just these NKOTBs out there making a run, which was pretty impressive.
Yeah, no. I mean, I thought it was great. I thought Jordan Peele... I don't know if the script was well deserved. I think the movie was so
Well
received, and
I think
it was,
the story was better than the actual, like, I would say, like, breaking the script itself down, like, writing wise, it was.
It could have gone Lady Bird too for script. I mean, for a lot of witty dialogue. Get Out just had.
Also, I had no idea Daniel. Please, someone say his last name for me because I will not say it correctly. The lead actor from
Coolia.
Was British. No idea. Okay. Opened his mouth.
Hot though, right?
He's really hot. Well, that'll
you love a good
now
Brit.
He's in the old Brit list.
The Brit list,
along with every plane from Dunkirk. Not British.
Man, speaking of Brit list, what about Gary Oldman?
Oh, good segue. Wife beater Gary Oldman. Time's up.
Him too.
After this one though, we have one more in us. One more time in us, and then your time's up. Wait, with Kobe Bryant.
Speech.
Okay, we have 2 more times in us. And then everyone's time's up. But we swear to God, after this one.
Well, Gary Oldman, his speech was like the least speech-worthy speech ever. That was the least prime minister speech.
It was the least prime minister speech. It was the least Gary Oldman type of speech, like you would have thought somebody with that much panache.
I can't believe he didn't do any lines
like
from the Fifth Element.
He comes up and just basically pulls out a list and thanks everybody on the list.
Was he trying to get that jet ski?
No.
Can we picture Gary
Oldman?
He was, and that's what I'm saying. Like, it wasn't like he got up there and did 30 seconds and was off, and you go, oh, well, I wanted more. He gave you plenty. It was just nothing that you wanted.
He didn't say anything forever.
Right. This stage.
He, like, thanked America and nobody clapped. That was cool.
Right.
They were like, yeah, we don't like America anymore. Gary, what year is
Hollywood.
It? Hello. America was so last year, Gary. We're all into Britain now. Hey, time's up.
Yeah, what else happened?
Kobe Bryant, rapist.
God.
Swish.
Oof. Yeah.
Swish.
That was a sweet 3-pointer from Kobe. And people are like, whatever. His wife forgave him. I'm like, okay. Well, then I guess that's all it takes. We're good.
Until Jen has forgiven him. Do you just not believe in forgiveness, Jen?
Well, I think that, no.
It did kind of smack.
Oh, that's a fun
of
pun.
It
wasn't a pun.
No, it wasn't a pun. it did kind of just feel off compared to everything Kimmel does. And then it's one of the first, 2 or 3 awards, really, that happened, too.
What, Kobe Bryant?
Yeah,
no,
Kobe
that
Bryant.
Was significantly. I don't know. Honestly,
was it
Jason.
That far in? I get confused.
I don't know. I don't know. The passage of time when watching the Oscars is very. Very confusing.
There was definitely
the passage of time's up, however, pretty clear.
There was definitely a feel, though, of like, oh, this kind of contradicts everything that's been set up to this point. You know?
Absolutely.
Oh,
I mean,
definitely.
Franco wasn't there. They got rid of Franco.
Casey
Affleck. Got rid of Casey Affleck.
Did Tommy Wiseau get an invite? They should have invited Tommy Wiseau and not Franco.
And
that
Greg
been cool.
Sestero. Right?
Yeah, that would have been awesome.
I didn't see, but the Disaster Artist was one thing, and I can't remember what it was. It was something
adapted screenplay. Yeah.
Yeah, so at least they both could have been there. They were probably in the way back with the Dunkirk people. Okay. Those guys, every time they thought they weren't going to have a good
So overall, how did you think, though, Jen? I mean, you live tweeted the whole thing. What did you... I know it was long.
Well,
but did you feel...
I mean, here's, this is going to sound really terrible. I'm really happy all these things are happening now with women, but I also think it makes for a terrible award show.
Right.
Oh, I know that sounds bad because I think you could still be politically active, but like maybe just like let's keep these things a little like loosey goosey. Maybe that sounds terrible because it's not like people who don't already believe in this or are aware of this, they're watching the show already. So who are you convincing?
Right.
Like everyone watching the Academy Awards, all like everyone in Hollywood and then me. We're already on board, so we don't need you to get up there and like remind us of that.
Yeah, they kept on talking about making jabs at Trump and Pence. Dude, they are not watching this shit right
now. Who cares?
And anybody that is watching and supports them is just like, shut up.
Let's have some more fun. Get some women on some trampolines or whatever. You know,
give away another jet ski.
More female directors on trampolines.
Have Gal Gadot outside at a kiosk selling lotion, which is where I met an Israeli ex-boyfriend. So. Sorry, that's what you do when you get to this country and you're from Israel.
All right.
Well, on that note.
Fade us out. We're going to talk Clueless when we get back. I don't know. Play some more Oscar music.
Yeah. And visit us at suncinema.com.
This was not nominated for any Oscar, but it's original music by Morris, friend of the station. We'll be right back.
Gibson accurately. They didn't say that Polonius guy did.
God, I wish there was a way to like play video on a podcast, because her face that she makes there is just perfect.
It's really good.
Time's up, Mel Gibson.
Oh yeah,
sorry, he was
time's kind of been up for Mel Gibson.
Well, no, remember, he came back last year to the Academy Awards. They love him again. They're like, he's fine, this Hacksaw movie is great. So Clueless, ladies month. And the mood is right. Oh, yes, it's ladies' month. Oh, what a month.
Beautiful.
Oh,
that was
what
well
a
done.
Ah, as if. Thank you.
So we're going to watch Clueless this coming weekend. It's one of my favorite movies from...
Yeah.
At Sun Cinema, you're playing Clueless?
Yes. No, we're screening it. Sun Cinema. We're a cinema down in Mount Pleasant.
We're just going to go to Ryan's house.
You just have to hear us jabber all the time. We have a cinema. We're playing this movie.
When
on
is
Saturday.
That?
It's Saturday.
Oh, I don't have it's any plans. Okay.
You can't go.
Can I still get in as a friend of the podcast and a friend of the cinema and a person who drinks a lot?
You have to work behind the bar.
You have to pretend you know sign language and you can be your interpreter.
I feel like the woman, that sweet woman at the Oscars again. I keep bringing the Oscar when she did that sign language thing. By the way, that woman was gorgeous.
Oh,
can we talk about her
looking.
Aesthetically only and not as like a person?
Don't remember this.
You guys didn't watch the woman who gave up and said she did the sign thing?
Yeah.
Gosh, she was beautiful. Google image her later.
It was hard to pay attention to the whole thing.
So yeah, Clueless. Amy Heckerling?
Yeah, Amy Heckerling, which, not to, well, let's sidestep. That's what we do here. Have you ever seen this other movie she did in 2007 called I Can Never Be Your Woman?
Yes.
Michelle Pfeiffer.
Yes.
And Paul
Rudd. Also, great song.
Also, Saoirse Ronan is also in it.
Yeah.
Stacey Dash.
Oh, she must Clueless love alum. Poor Stacey Dash. They still friends?
So yeah, where do we want to start with Clueless? Do we want to start with Stacey Dash? Do we want to?
We could talk about the Deadpool of that film, which is sadly Cutie Pie.
Ty.
Oh, yeah. What is her real name? Brittany Murphy.
Brittany Murphy. Yeah.
And technically, if you want to think about it, Dolores from the Cranberries is like a not really in the film, but referenced in the film in a very pivotal scene.
I think we're gonna have a cocktail called Cranberry CD.
You have to
Saturday.
Go get it at the quad. Yeah. You can only get it at the quad.
It's just going to be like Cranberry and Malort.
I have one called My Foot Hurts. Anything Elton says, except for when he's rapey. Damn it. Oh, me too. In the car.
God, Elton, don't you know how to suck? Something like that? Right?
Well, remember in the car when he like gets a little too handsy with Cher. I like to bring it down. Clueless is a fun, uplifting film, and I'm only going to talk about the rapey.
Jesus.
Sorry.
Excellent.
Is that when she gets robbed? Too.
Yeah, shortly yes. thereafter.
Wearing her Amaya.
Now, we've all been to... Have we all been to Los Angeles, California?
I lived there for a little while.
You lived there. Yes. I lived there for 6 years.
I've never been.
At the time, I was 15 when Clueless came out, so I was not living there yet.
I was living in L.A. when it came out.
You were. So this is what's interesting.
I was in the burbs. I was in the valley.
Did you watch that movie and go, you can't get anywhere in L.A. in 20 minutes? What is this crazy line? Unless what he was suggesting was never, ever leave Beverly Hills because you can get anywhere in Beverly Hills in 20 minutes.
Yeah.
That line always made me so mad as someone who has spent hours in a car getting like 10 feet in Los Angeles. I remember being like, yo, that's a lie.
Well, they're trying to say the valley isn't L.A.
Yeah, I went to school in Hollywood and had to drive to
6 hours.
Some days down to Orange County to work.
Ugh.
Plenty of time on the 605 and the 405, just hanging out.
It's the only place where you say the in front of the anywhere
yeah,
else.
Yeah, the 405, exactly.
Like, I don't
the
go,
101.
I've never been on the 50 here, but I heard
so,
it's nice.
Yeah, so remember when like the Beverly Hills was on fire? Or right. Bel Air was on fire?
Yeah.
That's definitely
Was that an episode of Fresh Prince?
No, just in... There was a fire, but in fire season, December, whatever. The whole thing looked hellishly ablaze. That was like right next to the Horowitz house.
I didn't
know
it had gotten all the way to places that mattered. I thought it was just suburbs.
Bel Air does not matter. It sucks. There's nothing over there.
Bel Air's not
cool. They're all going to be fine.
Yeah, I think they're all right.
And this film is a sassy modern adaptation of Jane Austen's Emma. Which is a book that I love, and
Never
I love I love sassy modern adaptations. Like Bridget Jones is a sassy modern adaptation of Pride and Prejudice. They even keep Colin Firth as Mr. Darcy. They being Helen Fielding.
Exactly.
10 Things I Hate About You
is The Taming of the Shrew, which very is fun because they the wordplay.
They
like,
rhyme.
They do. They sound very similar, and that's what I love about that movie. Those sneaky ways you can get those classics into the eyes and ears of teens, because teens don't like classics. Is the lesson.
And it was coming 13 years after like the seminal Fast Times at Ridgemont High, which kind of launched Amy Heckerling.
God, that's right. But that wasn't a sassy adaptation of anything but the 70s.
Well, no, but I always thought it was great. Like she did two of the seminal high school angst, you know, comedies of all time.
Let's compare
and
them
way apart from each other.
And yeah, 13 years separating them. You know,
so she never grew up.
Yeah, she raised all of us.
Right. Yes. Yeah, if you missed her in Fast Times at Ridgemont High.
But these
Amy
are obviously
Heckerling
such
comes back.
Like overblown ideas of which is nice. I mean, Fast Times at Ridgemont High is I guess slightly more rooted in some sort of reality.
Oh, do you think Clueless isn't?
I think they're definitely archetypes, you know, archetypes, but it's for
Clueless
a reason.
Works. I think Clueless is pretty damn close to high school in Southern California. I remember.
Really?
Like, everything about it feels like
it. Is it that crazy?
What's crazy about it? It's just everything's outdoor and sunny, which now you wouldn't
that's
imagine.
True.
But that's very realistic.
But just like, I guess, I guess I've hung out with really wealthy people and they are that out of touch. And
there's always enough people with like
insane.
High school kids with Beamers and shit.
I grew up, but sorry. Sorry.
Beverly Hills.
Grew up in the real world.
Didn't you watch 90210?
MTV's
Come on.
Real world. Of course I did. Are you kidding? Do you not follow me on Instagram? There's a photo of me from 1991 with Jenny Garth, who was doing a mall tour.
Yeah, I did see that. That was great.
What?
She was doing a mall tour back when people did mall tours. She was at a Woodward and Lothrop, RIP. And I'm wearing a sassy silk vest. And my mom was clearly taking the picture because I look fucking furious that she's even trying to capture this moment that I am speaking to Kelly Taylor.
So we get a lot of great high school archetypes there. You get the... it gets kind of racist. Doesn't she say something about the Persian mafia?
I guess, but is that like racist? Because I think they're just called the Persian mafia because they hang out together and they're all Persian. Okay, but I don't know if that's like a racist thing about Persians.
Okay, so then there's like the yuppies. There's the stoners over on the grassy hill.
Yes.
And Travis Birkenstock becomes a great...
that's like a classic like Hughes-style sort of like... Because I don't recall my high school at least, being that... Like, so that when I say like a little exaggerated, like it was never that pocketed, at least for me. I mean, maybe there were like weirdos, but it wasn't so obvious.
Oh, it was.
I also was the person who hung out with everybody.
I started to say I kind of drifted among all those groups, but and even growing up in the Midwest in the 80s and 90s, like those pockets were pretty well defined.
Yeah. I recall that
obviously
too.
Noticeable.
Yeah,
I don't recall
the
there being like
kids,
cool lunch tables though. Like I've never, there's no makeout point anywhere. Like people are just making out wherever. Everywhere you are is the makeout point. But like, which is something I always wish we had. Like a weird cliff where if it didn't go well, you could just jump right off.
Okay, so Jen didn't live clueless for high school. We get it.
No, but I did want that wardrobe desperately at 15. Everything she wore was like.
She does 63 wardrobe changes in the movie.
63.
It cost $200,000 to clothe her, and that was because, and they're proud of this fact, because they didn't go straight designers, like across the board. They really wanted them to look like kids from 1995 who just had an exorbitant amount of access to credit cards and cash, and would all the things that they bought were things that were purchasable in malls in the area.
Oh, God.
Would they That's have awesome. Shopped in the malls? Like, wouldn't they have just been on Rodeo Drive? Or
nice.
Because
no,
like there was
the
only
mall. Still go to the mall.
There was the Beverly Center.
It's the early and mid 90s, man. It was still like and the malls. If
oh, I know the mall culture. Can co-sign.
But I'm saying
on.
That mall culture in Bel Air and Beverly Hills and everything. There's some pretty sweet malls, you know, like selling some pretty extravagant stuff.
So we had great costume design. We also have really good set design throughout the movie. I forget who helped did the set design, but good detail on a couple of the marijuana pieces. And actually, there's an old All Bongs Considered where Bong Boylan does like a great review of a couple of the pieces on there. Jack, if you want to play it, we could just listen
along. Oh, do you have
the
clip? Great.
Yeah, I think we...
Hey, everybody. Welcome to All Bongs Considered. I am your host, Bong Boylan. And here on our inaugural episode, I'm really excited to be talking about... You know, for me, is one of the most... formative and important bong scenes in a 90s film, but it is also one of the most subtle. That's what makes it so interesting. It's just a quick little part, but it really features as two of the most iconic tubes that it came out of the 90s era. So we can get right down into the scene. The scene features our stoner character, Travis Birkenstock, who played with all of the affable and familiar affectations of the stony baloney dude, the local lodi that hangs out on the grassy knoll. Put Marvin the Martian.
We gotta bring him over for
all that going on.
Fast times
and
too.
The scene is he's meeting our ingenue Cher at the Pismo Beach Relief, and he's bringing a bunch of household wares, you know, like jam.
Do you guys remember the Pismo Beach Relief?
Yes.
Then what's this in the box? It's a what? A vase or what is this thing? No, what he's got in there is what's referred to as a fist grip tube. Now, this has sort of an ergonomic, like joystick style grip.
See, Bong Boylan always does the most detailed reviews, and he's a real big film aficionado, too.
I wonder which hat he was wearing at the time.
A small pork pie fedora. So later on that clip, he goes and reviews the Honey Bear bong. There's like someone took that.
That's a classic.
Yeah. And he like gives a how-to to like put ice into it and turn it into like a 13 to 14 use house piece.
I'd like this to be a regular segment, regardless of whether or not it makes sense for
We've
the
reached
show.
Out to his agent. We're trying to get him on.
Yeah.
Oh, cool. Well, let's see. Hopefully we'll make that happen.
Well, you have to go through Hemp PR.
Yeah. You guys are showing Clueless on Saturday.
Correct.
So when's the last time each of you have viewed Clueless.
Oh, I mean, Saturday, it was on cable, and I reviewed it for this.
Oh, this past Saturday.
It just happened to be on the cable. Since I'm 38, I have that. And I knew that we were going to talk about this, so I revisited it.
Oh, awesome.
With great love and affection.
At least 5 years, probably okay. longer.
Ryan, how long?
It's been a
long
time.
Yeah, it's probably been 5 years, but I watched it enough times, so it's just always replaying.
Yeah. I think probably a couple of years for me, but definitely I feel like it's one of those, you don't even question whether it holds up. It's kind of like Fast Times, where you're just like, it's just great.
Yeah,
like
I would say it's better than Fast Times.
Oh, 100%, although maybe is that because it speaks to us and how old we were at the time?
Yeah, that's probably.
Because I was shares
I think,
age.
Yeah, I think if you talk to someone in
older.
their late 40s, early 50s, they would definitely go, no, not a chance.
All right.
Fast Times. Because it had that same kind of moment. It just really captured that time and place.
What we haven't even spoken about yet is Paul Rudd, who was not yet Paul Rudd.
Such a Baldwin.
Yeah.
He was such a Baldwin. This is what I also like about this movie. So when I interviewed, about to drop that name, Tina Fey, for the musical adaptation of Mean Girls. I know you guys have never heard of her. Look her up. She's done some stuff. Tina Fey.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
She's a woman?
She was a woman.
Okay.
She was a woman. So they're going to let her live this month. That's what in Women's Month is all about. You kill less women every March. And so she talked about how when they did the musical version, the reason why they came up with Fetch at the time was they wanted to not have something that was dated. So they made up these... like these phrases and sayings you couldn't be like, oh yeah. So I think about that when I hear, because I don't think riding the Crimson Wave was necessarily something that I would say about my period, but it was always something that was like very, very fun and funny. And there's like other like weird little, like the Baldwin thing. He's such a Baldwin. That's not a real thing that anyone's ever said, but it's fun.
How big was As If before that movie?
I don't know. I don't think it's because it feels like a very Valley Girl thing, but it's not in the film Valley Girl, which is another movie I could reference only about LA. Sure. That's like so very LA in a certain
I think Valley Girl
time.
Is definitely in that list.
Yeah, for sure.
Like
for
LA,
sure. For sure. For sure.
Great.
For sure. That's Nicholas. Was he Coppola in that film?
Yeah.
Nick Coppola.
And he was just.
His voice.
Amazing.
Okay, Jack, you play us out while we gush over Nick Cage, and we're going to come back and talk why there aren't female directors in Hollywood movies. Turns out there aren't.
Okay, like right now, for example, the Haitians need to come to America. But some people are all, what about the strain on our resources? But it's like when I had this garden party for my father's birthday, right? I said RSVP because it was a sit-down dinner. But people came that, like, did not RSVP. So I was, like, totally bugging. I had to haul ass to the kitchen, redistribute the food, squish in extra place settings. But by the end of the day, it was like, the more, the merrier. And so, if the government could just get to the kitchen, rearrange some things, we could certainly party with the Haitians. And in conclusion, may I please remind you that it does not say RSVP on the Statue of Liberty. Thank you very much.
That was a great and timely speech about immigration reform in the United States of America, both in 1995 and today.
The gum twirling really makes it. It really drives the point home.
God, ambular.
Ambular.
All right. Should we dive into this really depressing report about women making films?
Yes.
Are you interested at all? Do you just want to comment? We could just feed you all the highlights and you just rip on it.
I started to read it and I actually got so deeply sad. Although I do say that I do know that I have a lot of filmmaker friends. That's so sad. I'm sorry I said that. But they do that. They do a hashtag filmmaker Friday, and it's they've been doing women a lot lately. So it's been an exciting thing for me to discover all these. And a lot of my friend Travis works for his production company produces a lot of horror films, and they have a lot of women making these horror movies, which is something I think is very interesting.
Yeah.
So I think they're out there.
It turns out they
not.
Are. No. Oh. So the Sundance Institute and Women in Film Los Angeles did a study on careers of female directors. They spent 3 years looking at...
It took 3 years to find a woman. They're like, what?
Three years. Basically, they looked at like 12, 13 years of film and looked at the top grossing ones, some of the independent, and came up with some stats.
Like this stat. Across the 1,300 top grossing films over a 12-year span from 2002 to 2014... Only 4.1% of all those films were directed by females.
So that's the top 1,300. So that's like one of the bleakest numbers, but it's hugely bleak. So yeah, 1,300 films. These were like the top 1,300 films, top earning 1,300 films in those years. So that's where you see like the smallest margin of women being allowed to direct films. Now, but like Jen was just saying, with female filmmakers in the independent level, we found the ratio of male to female directed movies in competition at like Sundance Fest from 2002 to 2014 was about 3-1. Yeah. Some years it would be 26%. Some years it would be about 50. It's not great, but
certainly better than 4.1%.
Did you just hear about the women that purchased Harvey Weinstein's company? Six women got together and they purchased the Weinstein production company. And so now all of that is owned by six women. And they're firing everyone and they're replacing.
That's the thing. I don't think they should be firing everyone. There are people in that company, and I'm sure they're not firing everyone.
I think they'll fire people that were possibly maybe complicit or possibly probably aware.
Does Harvey not get just to keep like a board position?
Yeah, he's going to stay on in name only.
I think that's great. I mean, I truly do think that's great.
So that gives me some hope in terms of what kind of movies.
So this is something that can definitely like help drive this forward is when you see more women in executive positions, which we don't have a report on that, but I'm sure it's pretty low too.
Yeah.
But there's one thing, I don't know, when we were coming up with this calendar, a lot of it ended up being independent or like experimental or avant-garde or politically subversive stuff.
Not a lot of mainstream stuff.
Yeah.
Because it's just not there.
Because, yeah, there is a lack of it in mainstream movies. I mean, I'm psyched that we have a cool calendar because of that. Like,
totally.
It is more...
Makes you work a little harder.
It's also the kind of stuff we like to play.
I think
we like more out there stuff, challenging stuff. But with women directors, it really... There's tons of great stuff. Groundbreaking stuff. And in visual effects, like tomorrow night, we're going to do a night of all avant-garde filmmakers like Maya Darin, Jermaine Duloc. And cool, like crazy stuff that's all the way from the 20s to the 40s, 50s. Shirley Clark, we're showing a few of her movies. Yeah. But again, these things were made for nothing. And mainstream cinema definitely suffers for how...
Women don't make any money, so we know how to squeeze a dollar.
I thought one of the most telling statistics in this article, it's a Variety article. Uh-huh. Maybe we can link to it in the notes or something from this. But this Variety article that came out in April of 2015...
Referencing the report.
Yeah, that's referencing this larger Sundance report that we're talking about. Really does a great job of sizing. And one of the things that really jumped out at me was among the results, they surveyed like 40 men and 20 women in the film business. And 42% of those people believe the scarcity of female directors is due to a small pool of female directors. They don't exist.
Wow.
Okay, so yeah, the question
they couldn't even find half and half to like talk to. By the way, they were like, "We got to get 40 men and 20 women to talk to."
Well, I started to say that in and of itself is a little strange that it wasn't like 40-40. It was 40-20, and then 42% said we just don't believe women directors exist.
They're like vampires.
So let's look at the other answers for this too. So they asked these 40 men and 20 women. Also, they were trying to pick a good representation of people in the biz who were making these decisions. So it wasn't that they were just not picking half women. They wanted it to be more representative of what Inside Hollywood was actually thinking.
Right.
So I think they let that gender imbalance be there on purpose. But why aren't there more major films directed by women? Among the results of the survey of 39 men and 20 women, 44% said female directors are perceived to make films for a subset and or less significant portion of the marketplace. So
they can't make blockbusters.
Oh, man. Well, they're just, what that says to me is they think that even if we were doing that like women are supposed to find an interest in a male-driven film, but there's just no way any men could ever find an interest in what is perceived as a female-driven film, which is insane.
Yeah.
just the same way that, like, when people are talking about Black Panther, all of my friends who are people of color are saying, like, for years I have been, like, watching these movies where all these superheroes are white, and I have still, like, I've been able to identify with them. So, like, now you can identify with Black Panther, and it's possible to identify with something that is not you.
It is possible.
Where did I see this clip from?
Was it Kumail?
Yeah.
It was a Kumail in that thing, and it was amazing. And he goes,
That was a
great thing that he said, and I loved it. He was like,
yeah, we're going to paraphrase it, but go ahead.
Yeah, for years, Kumail was talking about how he's every movie that he's loved has been, like, driven by, like, white people primarily, and he was able to enjoy them. And so now it is your turn to, like, enjoy his film and people that look like him. And it was great. And it's a valid point.
So
it was beautiful.
Yeah.
And I wish they would remember that Emily also wrote that movie just once.
So 25% cited that women's perceived lack of ambition and taking on directing jobs. So women just don't want to do it.
Yeah, we're tired. We're out there getting periods all the time and having babies. And
12%.
Jesus, 12%
cited the belief that women can't handle certain types of films or aspects of production, such as commanding a large crew.
It's all heavy. Jesus. Have you ever tried to pick up a camera? It's real spaghetti arms over here. I'm not getting any of that.
So there's one kind of what I think is maybe the correct answer, and only 22% of those surveyed cited the skewed representation of women in the decision-making roles in the industry as a factor in limiting job opportunities for female directors. So only like 1 out of 5 thought it had anything to do with maybe bias.
Like nobody hiring women. Yeah. And everyone else was just like, sounds like some weird witchy moon Menzies stuff to me. And I'm like, that's probably
Can't find those women directors. They don't exist.
We've looked under every rock. Even The Rock. Not there.
Yeah. So I don't know.
Maybe Greta and Lady Bird and...
Well, maybe she'll be one and done.
Even Emily, she could suffer from the sophomore slump, which I'm like, you know, I feel like a lot of people are pinning their like a lot on poor Greta, who like rocketed like out with her first film, and everyone's gonna be like, what's that second movie gonna be, Greta?
Yeah,
I feel like there's maybe a little bit of people wanting her to fail, but like thinking like,
there's definitely people who want her to fail.
Yeah. You're lucky, Greta.
Yeah.
Now it has to be it's going to be Lady Bird, and then it's going to be Woman Bird. It's a great movie.
Lady Birds have curves.
And then Old Bird, and then Dead Bird. It's a series. It's like it's like Edgar Wright's, what was it called? The Corelli, you're going to say
the Craymaster?
Edgar Wright's The Shaun of the Dead, Hot Fuzz, and it's the Corelli series.
Oh, no, it's the...
what's it called?
Cornetta.
Thank you. That's going to be her Cornetta series. It's Lady Bird, yeah. Woman Bird, Old Bird, Dead Bird.
Old Bird, Dead
Bird. Bird Woman.
Bird.
Yeah, so, well, that was one of the other things. There's a whole another article from the Hollywood Reporter about One and Done. And also looking at...
You could look at Patty Jenkins, who, you know, got an Academy Award for Monster, and then like 11 or 12 years later was just like Wonder Woman.
Yeah.
Like, what was she doing? In theory, if you win an Academy Award for a film, I don't know if it was her. I don't know, actually. So it's unfair for me to assume that no one came a knocking.
I've got you.
Tell me.
Okay, so study finds that 80% of female directors made only one movie in 10 years. And Pat Jenkins isn't on this, but they have some other directors saying, like, you know, if you're trying to make it and you're trying to raise a family and stuff, one movie, one opportunity to make a movie every 10 years is ridiculous. But with men, believe this or not, okay, men are very likely, I think it's about 46% of them get to make another movie in the next 10 years.
If they make does it depend on the success of this film? Because obviously,
you know,
once again, like Patty Jenkins making an Academy Award winning film and then not doing anything until Wonder Woman. And I'm pretty sure she didn't really do anything again until Wonder Woman is kind of insane.
To be honest, I just looked her up.
Okay.
So this
she probably didn't get funny.
I'm telling you, she did almost nothing. Yeah. She directed one episode of Arrested Development the year following Monster.
Follow.
Yeah.
It's a good palate cleanser.
2 years later, she directed two episodes of Entourage. 2 years after the 1 year,
that's the opposite of Monster.
And she did everything she did over the next 10 years leading up to Wonder Woman was minimal and all television. No feature film again until Wonder Woman. So Monster in 2003, and 14 years later, she gets another feature that is Wonder Woman.
So,
well, she's killing it in the movies, I'll say this much.
In the Arrested Development episode, is it one with Charlize Theron? Please,
oh,
throne.
For British eyes only. You know, I love the Brits.
Did it say what episode?
Please let it be with Charlize.
No, it's the one where they build the house. Which I do remember
that.
Is that
old?
One.
That's pre-Charlize?
It's
within the first couple of...
It's first or second season.
Oh,
yeah.
It would have been amazing if Charlize was like, I have someone who could direct an episode. I only work with Patty Jenkins. Okay, Charlize, in this scene, she's like, you won't be raped. She's like, oh, thank God. I'm so tired of that.
No, but that is... I mean, that's a great point, Jen, because shockingly, I mean, you look at her... IMDb credit list, and it's just
so, like, I guarantee
disappointing.
Like, already people were banging down Jordan Peele. Now, again, I understand, obviously, as like as a black filmmaker, Jordan Peele also has his own set of problems in Hollywood.
For sure.
But like, people are absolutely, I know he's already writing, like, he wants to do a whole series of a political, I'm going to call
Didn't
it a thriller.
Like a noir, like a Hitchcock style noir with Janae Minot, right?
Did he?
I think he's working on that.
Oh, is he doing that? Oh. That
I saw, like, pictures from it.
Except does he not harass his female star? How Hitchcockian is he getting?
Yeah.
Is he going to harass her the whole time? Okay, cool.
Only blondes.
God, you're right.
I will say, as a caveat to the Patty Jenkins thing, she is already attached to direct Wonder Woman 2.
Atta girl.
In 2019.
Atta woman.
So, hey... I mean, there
is
something to be said.
Well, now she's stuck just only directing Wonder Woman films for the rest of her life.
Maybe, but look, I mean, better that than another 14-year hiatus between projects.
Totally. And in 2017, 8 women directed a top 100 movie, the study finds. So you're seeing Patty Jenkins.
Which, obviously, Patty. Yeah, which?
I think Greta Gerwig.
Yes, obviously.
Dee Reese.
Jesus. The fact that I don't know this is embarrassing. I should just have all this information.
But, I mean, wait. The one of the first lines in this article is, the good news is that 3 more women directed a top 100 film in 2017 compared with the year before. The year before was
we checked
8.
Another room, found 3 more.
Yeah, so about...
They were hiding.
So we opened this Narnia door and boop, there they were.
Oh, and the number since that study that was looking at films from 2012... Since 07 to 17, numbers gone down to 4% female directors in the top movies, in the top 1,223 movies.
Holy cow.
So it just keeps on going down. But we also got some good news about the black and Asian directors. I think there were 6. Let me see.
Just number? 6 in general?
No.
Oh my God. Everything is
there
awful.
Were like 6 black directors and 4 Asian directors. Directors in the last decade.
Oh, so it was 6.
Or wait,
to make it into the top.
Oh no, the last top 100 movies of 2017.
Oh, okay.
And Jordan Peele.
Great.
It's just Jordan Peele 6 times.
Yeah,
<exactly. laughs> Who is it?
They're counting all of his upcoming projects.
Yeah.
If someone comes and like just whoops our ass for being white guys, like, come on, we're asking for it.
We're making fun of these terrible statistics. It's fine.
I'm not making. I don't think it's. They're just so absurd. It is laughable. Like, you can't get your mind around the fact that really that's the best we can do.
Yeah. That a huge portion of pop culture narrative has been completely designed by older white men.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Academy is still comprised of, right? Isn't that mostly?
Oh, for sure. And, I mean, they've added 1,400 new people in the last couple of years.
Admittedly, I don't know how that works.
Yeah, I think a lot of new...
Explain how that works.
Yeah, a lot of new Democratic Socialists are actually primarying some of the Academy, and a lot more women, school teachers...
Wait,
no. Full circle, though, that is kind of weird. Like, why is Jimmy Kimmel the host? You know,
I don't know. Wouldn't that have been like your first? If I was like, first of all, oh wait, you know what we didn't talk about? Can we just go back to the Academy Awards for a second?
Sure, let's go for it.
The highest highlight for me was Tiffany Haddish and Maya Rudolph coming out and presenting. I love Tiffany Haddish so much.
Had her house shoes on.
Everybody, yeah, they were so both. They great. Walked out. They were they were telling it like it is. I'm so sorry, I just said that. and I'm so sorry, I just said that. I hate myself. And that was the
we all hate
she act, like. Honestly, I thought Tiffany Haddish had won an award. I'm like, oh, she won.
Oh, I know.
I was like clapping. I was like, I'm so glad she won. I was like, she's not. She just had that energy of someone who actually cared. It wasn't just like, on the next, and the best actor will be.
And it, you know you're in rarefied air when Maya Rudolph's just trying to keep up with you.
I know. Oh, yeah. I felt almost bad for Maya. I was like, Maya, like, hello. You've been doing this longer,
she
Maya.
She started holding her own, but like it was definitely it like was a moment slow where you're start. Like, holy cow.
Yeah, I felt bad. I was like, yikes, too much honey on the old stinger. Isn't she married to someone?
PTA. I think they have like a thing.
Paul Thomas Anderson.
They're dating.
Yeah.
Yeah, they've just been together forever.
It's Maya and Paul Thomas Fiona Anderson. And Paul Thomas. They're together, yeah. All of them. so, yeah, that was the highest highlight for me. I screamed.
All right, should we just, let's...
A little bit more extreme, like 90s
Oh,
and
yeah, here, let's go back to Bong Boylan. Thanks for listening to the Sun Cinema podcast.
Has the tipped spout of the tube, which curves at about like a 35-degree angle up to, you know, the smoker's mouth. And what that allowed for was like a sort of laid-back approach to hitting the tube. Like before, you would have to drape your face over the top of the tube. You might get smoke in your eyes. If you've got the long, wavy hair, you might get that caught up in there somehow. But this is laid back. You can sit back on the couch, not miss a moment of boob tube. And then, you know, you're taking your rips. But it's kind of like for me, I kind of think of it like a beach cruiser. Like, we're not talking about a rugged mountain bike. We're not talking about a speed, you know, speed demon kind of thing. This is more like a beach cruiser. It's just a flat pleasure cruise, you know. Before we get to the second bong in this scene, we have to cut to an ad from our sponsor. Hey. You ever go to take a rip out of your tube and your tube's all dirty and smells like a dumpster? Well, you're going to need Formula 420. That's the wash that you can put in your tube, and it's like, hey, man, they might as well sell it at Bath & Body Works. This stuff is legit. It's going to clean out that tube. You're going to get a nice, smooth rips.